commitment. To commit, you're binding or obligating yourself like a pledge, promise, a commitment to a course of action. Yeah, sounds good in theory. I know there's some people who every year they say, I'm going to lose weight, so they sign up for the local gym. And the local gym, of course, knows this is going to happen for a New Year's resolution, so they really kick in the advertising in high gear during the holidays. You know, they'll sell you any plan, any come on to get you in the door, $9 for a month, for 8 months, or whatever it is. And they get this big influx of people into the gyms for a New Year's resolution, and you can't find a parking spot. The place is packed. You might as well forget about trying to use the showers. The swimming pool looks like a bathtub. And then next week, it's a little bit better. And a week after that, and a week after that. By the time February rolls around, the place is a ghost town again. Why is that? Well, you know, I got to clean the house. I got to cook dinner. I got to do this. You know, I'm working late. Thousands and thousands of different excuses why they're not at the gym. So there's one way to get in shape. They said that was the way to go work out. Manage your diet, work out. Calories in, calories out. It's a simple physics problem. There's no magic to the diet industry. It's very simple. The amount of calories in, the amount of calories go out. If more go in than out, you gain weight. If less go in than go out, you lose weight. That's it. It's like a black box diagram. Calories in, calories out. So you decide, I'm going to watch my diet, and I'm going to work out. The working out part takes commitment. Sounds easy, difficult in practice. Every year, it's a joke from these people. They know, they tell people, I don't want to go there because it's busy. They say, let's just come back next month. Don't worry about it. If you're a serious bodybuilder, you have serious exercise, these people won't be here in February. The people that know, I think, don't even bother going to the gym in January. They just take that month, go out and do something else for a month, go running or something. And then, of course, there's the diet thing, right? Well, I'm going to start my diet right after this Twinkie. This will be it, the last Twinkie. No, this one will be the last Twinkie. No, this one will be the last Twinkie. No, well, you know, I was partying. I couldn't just sit there. Or smoking. Well, I'm quit smoking, but, you know, I was out at the bar with my friends. They're all smoking, so I figured, what the heck, I'll have a cigarette. I'll quit tomorrow. So their commitment to quit smoking or to go on a diet or to exercise or to do anything was veneer thin. They had no real commitment. What they had is they had a fantasy. They had a wish. I wish I was rich. So their solution, of course, is to buy lottery tickets. Anybody who buys a lottery ticket, and I hope someone on this phone, I hope I'm upsetting you personally when I say this. If you buy a lottery ticket, you're a loser. And let me explain why. You have given up hope and admitted to yourself that the only way you're going to get rich is to piss away a dollar at a time and some senseless a million to one or 10 million to one long shot that you're going to win the lottery. You might as well run around outside with your hands outstretched waiting for dollar bills to fall from the sky. That's about the odds of you winning. But yet, that's your plan. Anybody who does that has given up hope. They say, this is what I got going for me. And a lot of people are in that category. They assume that because they have a low-level hourly job at Walmart or wherever, that they're an immigrant and they're working, you know, cleaning houses, that's best they're going to do. That this is their, you know, they're never going to make it. They've given up. So they buy lottery tickets, or even worse, they commit crimes if they really want the money bad enough. And a lot of people do that. On the other hand, there's a very high percentage of self-made millionaires in this country who are either first or second generation immigrants. They came here with the idea of getting ahead, and they were determined to do so. Their commitment was unwavering, and it was 100%. Because they had it bad where they came from, they wanted to improve it. People in America, a lot of them, basically, since you're not allowed to starve to death here, it's against the law to starve to death. You really don't have to do anything because you can't die. The worst that will happen, you might be uncomfortable. So you don't have to do things, so most people don't. Well, you know, I could go to night school. You know, get my GED since I dropped out. But, you know, it's easier just to party. You know, I could go to night school and go to college and gradually work my way up. And the commitment level is there until they go there, and it's like Monday, Wednesday, Friday after work, they have to go to night school classes. And then they have to study otherwise. Then they have to take tests. And they have to do that for 16 weeks and pass all those tests. And they have to pay money. Then they have to go and do it all over again, semester after semester after semester. And if you're going part-time, that could take 6-8 years. That's a long haul. What kind of people do you think finish that long haul? Someone who has a kind of a wish, it would be really nice if I had a college degree. Gee, where can I buy one of those? So the things that are generally worth having are the things that are difficult to do. If you want to play the piano or a guitar or any other musical instrument. So the musical instrument, I think one of the most really personally revolting things that I've ever seen in my life is an air guitar. And they actually have air guitar championships. They have this stupid little air guitar that goes onto your Wii game or Xbox, whatever the hell it is. And all these kids who sat in front of TVs their whole life and played video games and whatever else never were made to do anything. All right? And now they have an air guitar so they can pretend they're playing guitar. I have a better idea. Why not simply insert probes into their pleasure centers of their brain and generate the fantasy directly and put them in one of those little pods like in a Matrix, right? Just wire them up. There you go. There's your ultimate air guitar. Now you don't have to do anything. You could pretend you're going to college. Look at me. I'm in a virtual college classroom taking virtual college classes. I'm virtually getting married. I virtually have a girlfriend. And I have an air guitar. You know what I'm saying? That's because they have sordid sense of reality of what they can get for effort. They expect things to be easy. And if anything requires any effort, I'd better play air guitar. Because if you pick up a real guitar, number one, the strings hurt your fingers for a long time if you build up calluses. Number two, you have to figure out how to tune the thing. Number three, it won't do anything without a lot of practice. All it's got is 6 strings and some frets and a pick. And it will sound really bad when you start banging on it. So the problem is it's real easy to say you want something, which is like a wish, a fantasy. A desire is a more intense, boy, I really, really want that. Like, I really want to be a nurse, so I'm going to I have to go to school at night, even though I'm working and I got 2 kids, but I'm going to work my way through nursing school, and I met people doing this. If you want to see something courageous, look at a young single mother with kids working full-time, then take care of family and going to nursing school sometime. That's work. An intense desire kind of then morphs into a, you know what, I'm not going to accept any alternative out of life, then I'm going to be a nurse, and that's it. There is no alternative. To me, there's no alternative. There's, I'm going to finish nursing school, or I'm dead. There's nothing in between. Nothing, absolutely nothing is going to stop me. So when there's a snowstorm and the car doesn't start, and she's faced with the idea of literally walking a couple miles to school or whatever it takes, she's humping it through the snow, going to class, even if she gets there late. She's finding someone to watch the kids. She's preparing meals at midnight the night before so the kids have dinner the next day. She's putting them in a freezer or whatever it takes. I mean, there's people who will do anything. They work 2, 3, 4 jobs. There's a commitment there. People sneak into the United States and they get caught. It costs them all their money, and then they come back and they do it again. They die in the desert trying to get in here so they can take a minimum wage job, which is 10 times better than what they had in their poverty back, say, Mexico or Honduras, wherever, so they could send money back home to the family, and after a couple of years, they want to go back there and have a house, have some semblance of a life, because what they had there was nothing. What kind of a commitment would make you walk across the desert of Arizona to get a minimum wage job? There's a certain magic that happens when you approach commitment. I'm going to explain this in a kind of a novel way, I think. In modern physics, which basically started with Einstein, E equals mc squared and some other formulas like that, he started looking at light, speed of light, and measuring it. And there's some completely non-intuitive things were really strange. That's why nobody believed it at first. Did you know that when you increase your speed, you can go, light travels at 186,237 miles in 1 second. That's about 7 times around the Earth's equator, around the Earth, in 1 second. Take your finger right now and spin it around in a circle as fast as you can. See if you can get 7 circles in 1 second. Can anybody do it? Well, the answer is you can't do it, unless you're a Chinese acrobat from Beijing. Okay? I've never been able to do it in 1 second. 7 circles. I don't think so. But that's how fast the light would travel around the Earth in 1 second. All right? Now, let's say that you approach 90% of that speed, and then 95%, and then 98%. Right around 98, 99, 99 and a half, all of a sudden, strange things happen. Time, which was actually gradually slowing, slows to zero at light speed. Time no longer exists. Okay? So if you were to travel exactly at the speed of light for 100 years, 50 years out and 50 years back, came back to Earth, the Earth would be 100 years older and you wouldn't have aged. Also, mass, the amount of, you could call it weight, that's on when you're on a gravitational field, the mass becomes like weight. But mass is just the amount of material. Mass, the nature of mass, you think it's fixed, right? Well, if I weigh 200 pounds, I always weigh 200 pounds. But what happens if you accelerate me fast enough, my weight becomes 300, then 1,000, and then infinity. Mass becomes infinite at the speed of light. Would anybody have guessed that? The reason nothing can travel faster than light is because you cannot accelerate an infinite mass. If something is infinitely massive, you can't make it move faster. It's just you can't budge it. And that's what happens to anything when it goes that fast. That's why they say you can't travel faster than light, unless there's a back door. Do you guys know that one?
Yes.
Time stops, mass becomes infinite. Nobody intuitively, where in the planet would you have looked at that? Oh, yeah, that makes sense to me. Nobody, it didn't make sense to anybody. But is it real? Well, let me think now. There was Nagasaki, Hiroshima, and all those other H-bomb tests. E equals mc squared. Energy equals mass times a constant, which is the velocity of light squared, 3 × 10⁸ meters per second. Meters squared per second squared, technically. 3 × 10⁸ squared is 9 × 10�16. A 9 with 16 zeros after it. So a little bit of mass creates a huge amount of energy because you're multiplying it by that really big number, 9 × 10�16. So that's why you can take a little bit of uranium 238, if you fission it, split it, it releases, you know, most of that energy gets released in a form of boom, right? Boom. A huge amount of energy. So what I'm saying is there's nuclear reactors, there's nuclear bombs, there's nuclear science is actually very well developed right now, all off of that formula, all telling you is based on the fact of all that, right? Energy mass equivalency and everything else. So this is all science, right? Everybody knows this. What's even weirder is when you get into quantum mechanics. A thing could be here, but it could be over there at the same time. You really can't tell where it is. If you can tell where it is, you don't know what mass it is. Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. Things get really strange with quantum mechanics. All right, so there's a huge amount of science that at one point we had no inkling. We could never understand it. But now we take it for granted. Could you imagine what electricity would have looked like to someone back in the 1800s, early 1800s? What do you think they would have made of that?
Witchcraft.
Arthur C. Clarke, famous quote, any technology sufficiently advanced is indistinguishable from magic. Anybody hear that quote?
Yeah.
Well, here's another one for you. Your mind is like a hologram. It actually contains the whole universe within it. A hologram is an image. It's a substrate which contains the whole image in any one part of a substrate. Like a normal photograph of a person would have his foot here, his head there, his arm there, and so on. But a hologram, you take any piece of that, and you have the whole image just at a slightly reduced resolution. It's a little bit fuzzier, in other words. You have the whole thing, you get a nice sharp hologram. If you take a little piece of it, you still have the whole image, but it's a little bit fuzzier. Less resolution, like a cheaper TV. And a lot of people think, that the human brain is a hologram. That's how it really works. That's why you can damage the brain in one side, and it, other sides will make up for it. You really can't localize the functionality of the brain so much as people think, because it's everywhere. All the functionality is distributed throughout, and it connects to something bigger beyond. So if you understand this, I know what this is starting to sound like to a lot of people. There's a certain magic in the word commitment. When people reach 90% commitment, what do you have? You have 10% that you'll quit, right? Well, you might as well be, you'll quit. If you have 90% commitment, you have nothing. Let's say that you're 90% dead. Are you alive or dead?
You're dead.
How about 90% pregnant? Can you be 90% pregnant?
Nope.
No.
It took you a while to figure that one out, right? What do you guys do? Going through the, trying to work this out with your hands or something? How does this work? Can you have 90% integrity?
No.
I have integrity 90% of the time. Right? How about a belief? I believe 90% of the time, then I don't believe that. Either you believe or you don't believe, right? So certain things are nonlinear. They're actually digital. They're on and off. They're all or nothing. It's called a step function. Up, all the way down. There's nothing in between. There's either high, low, on, off, yes or no. There's no middle ground. What happens at speed of light is that you transition. It looks like a really wild exponential. It's nothing, 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 nothing. And all of a sudden, right at about 99.9% light speed, everything goes insane. Right at the edge, goes nuts. That's when all the mass just jumps up. It's nonlinear. Your mass does not gradually increase. Otherwise, you see that on a train. You see your mass increase. Well, technically it does, but it's such a minute amount that it just doesn't matter. It becomes extremely noticeable at the edges. So what happens at the edges is where all the interesting things are in science, at the extremes. Things get weird. A Hall effect transducer creates a magnetic field of electricity. But when you take it down towards absolute zero, all of a sudden, it's a nonlinear, it goes like it quantizes, it goes in steps, just like a little staircase. All of a sudden, the magnetic field kind of like shifts and jumps. It's called the quantized Hall effect. I actually did my bachelor's thesis on that. Yeah, it was fun. But it's actually pretty simple. At the ends, at the extremes of low temperature, do you know what a superconductor is? When you reduce the temperature of something towards absolute zero, all molecules stop moving around. That's all heat is molecular motion. So the molecules stop moving around at absolute zero, which is about 473 negative Fahrenheit. Deep space goes down towards absolute zero. There's always a little bit of thing going on there, but they can recreate that in a lab pretty much all the way down within a couple hundredths of a percent, I think. Just really unbelievably low temperature. They make everything stop moving. They basically use lasers, and they shine the lasers at the molecules to fix them in place so they can't move anymore. That's how they get it down the rest of the way. Can you believe that? They don't want any atoms jiggling around. Resistance to current flow is gone. So you can have electricity, and it'll just keep, it's like a perpetual motion machine. Once you get the current going in a loop, you can connect it, like a wire, get electricity going, put it in a loop, it'll just keep going round and round and round and round and round, generating magnetic field the whole time. And the fact to be like a perpetual motion machine, except the fact that you're dumping huge amounts of energy to keep it at negative 473, okay? So you're not really getting any free energy. You're putting like a million in, getting one out. But strange things happen at the extremes. At the extremes, you can see that we're like one star amongst a solar system, and that we're in this one spiral arm out, and there's hundreds of billions of stars in the Milky Way galaxy, of which we're part of that, and there's like about 13 galaxies in a big cluster, and there's hundreds of billions of galaxies. And at the extreme, you start seeing all that. It's a lot different than your viewpoint of the little planet. You start seeing the little Earth going around the sun, and you start seeing this sun as one part of the Milky Way, and then you see all these little dots, which are all galaxies, and it just gets weirder and weirder at the extremes, right? Well, here's what happens with commitment. Whether you want it to or not, your commitment won't work unless it's 100%. When your commitment reaches 100%, the universe literally aligns, like all the planets aligning. The universe actually aligns all up and kisses your ass, so to speak. Magic happens at that point. If your commitment is 100% unwavering, you can literally force the universe, you can force your will onto the universe to a certain extent. And if you don't have that unwavering commitment, then the smallest obstacle, the littlest pebble, will trip you up. And you won't make it to the gym, and you'll have another cigarette, and you'll have another piece of cake, and you'll watch TV instead of studying. And you won't make that next call on if you're a salesperson. You know what I mean? Or you won't put an extra hour playing the violin. The commitment will just crumble around you. It's like integrity. As soon as it starts crumbling at one corner, it's gone completely. It's destroyed. It's like one termite in your house. No big deal, right? Do you know how fast termites breed? Come back in a week. You've given them a food source. And they will eat your house. How about if you lived in a neighborhood of 1,000 people and only one of them was a thief? And there's, 300 houses. And he robs one house a day, and one year everybody's house got robbed. But you only had one, right? That's why we used to have the hangman's tree. Find them, hang them, that takes care of that. So to a large extent, you actually control your own destiny. You just have to have a firm commitment. Well, how do you get a firm commitment, 100% commitment? People don't understand a commitment. And here's the main reason why. A commitment, having 100% commitment was never necessary in your life, so you didn't use it. It wasn't a survival need. You didn't need 100% commitment to survive. And you still don't. You do not need any commitment to get by in life. You can just get a job. Just get a job, just go to work, do the minimum, like most people do. Their economic formula for them is do just what's necessary to keep a job, get along with people, don't do any more than you have to, and go home and have fun. And so that's what the majority of people do. Why work your ass off unless you're going to gain by it? In a lot of circumstances, if you're a really good worker, it's not going to help you much. You may get promoted if that's what you want. But you also maybe get exploited at that level. So it might not be worth it to you. So most people, given the fact that nobody is allowed to starve in the United States of America, it's against the law. And again, I mentioned this on a previous recording session, that just go stand on a street corner with us and just sit there. And don't say nothing. Just sit there and start starving to death and watch what happens. It'll probably take about 8 hours before a police officer walks out there. But if you keep coming back to that spot, you keep looking worse and worse because you're not eating. And if you ask, you say, I don't have any food, I'm not eating. They will literally take you to the hospital and it will intravenous feeding. They will feed you, get you back in shape, and put you back on the street again. Nobody starves in this country unless something weird happens, like a crime. Therefore, what are most people rationally and logically deduce out of this situation? It's rational, then, to do the least amount of work. Just go along to get along, do the least amount, and then just have fun. Why not? Just have fun. Just go to work, do what you need to do, and then have a life. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's fine. Watch TV. Socialize with your friends, watch sports, you know what I mean? Just go out, have drinks. You're going to die anyway, so what's the difference? You might as well smoke, exercise, why bother? You're going to die anyway, so say you die when you're 72 instead of, 74. You know what I mean? You may get a disease, but hey, that's later. Why should I worry about it? So I'm not in that great shape. I don't really do anything. I haven't really kind of... Accomplishment from what? What's the future? What do you... Right, some religions will tell you that all you need to do is believe and you go right to heaven, regardless if you went to night school, regardless if you were employee of the month, regardless of how hard you worked or what you accomplished. Everybody goes to the same heaven. Given that kind of a formula, why should you bust your ass? Everybody gets what everybody is. It's just like the ultimate form of socialism. No matter what you do, as long as you say, I believe, you go to heaven. Well, that's a good deal. So once you take that in and you absorb that, then everything else falls right into place. Well, I'll go to work, but why? I'm not going to bust my ass. I'll just say, do the minimum. I'll get by. And you're rewarded for that, as long as you get along with people, as long as they like you. So then a survival trait becomes more who likes you. As long as people like you and you're okay, you're one of them, you get along good, and you, right? And if you have any brain cells that function, you're at a disadvantage there because then you make people, other people think, and people don't want to think, it hurts their head. And if you start thinking, saying funny things that have an any ounce of intelligence behind it, you're going to lose friends. Therefore, you learn very quickly that thinking doesn't pay off, but a new shirt does, and a new hairdo, that works good. Shiny new shoes. Keeping up on the latest cultural entertainment phenomena, what movie stars in, which ones are out. You know what I'm saying? Those things put you into the group. It's like the ancient tribes. If you don't fit in, they'll just banish your ass or maybe have you for dinner. When they go and get stuff, they start eating people. Guess who's first in line? The person that thought too much, the ambitious one who kept trying to change everything. Why should I change everything while we're all eating? What benefit is there? Why bother? So therefore, there's no commitment is needed in our culture because we're not trying to do anything challenging or difficult. Then you go into an environment where you do are challenged and you do are demanded to do something, and you're completely ill-equipped to do so. You have no concept. So the first thing you do when you reach that kind of a challenging thing is to do what? What do, you guys?
Most people quit.
Exactly. Thank you very much. They quit. When the going gets tough, they quit. Because they were trained to do it that way. It was a smart thing to do. Why bother? Why should I bust my ass? I'm dead anyway. Life has no meaning or purpose. I'm going to go to heaven or not, because, you know, everybody's eventually going to go to heaven. All I have to do is say, well, I believe, and I'm going to heaven. And again, this could be any religion. By the way, I'm not picking on any one. I'll pick on them all. All of them. They all basically have the same shtick. Hundreds of them, by the way. Hundreds and hundreds. They all say, you believe, you're in good shape. You don't believe, we're going to eat you. That's basically the deal. So, why bother? So why do people quit? Because they lack the commitment to stick it out when it gets tough. It's easy to say, oh, I'll get this great job as a sales rep, but then you get rejected on a call, you're another one, and the process is real tricky, and all of a sudden it becomes hard. So given the fact that the self-esteem movement when they were in school passed them from grade to grade regardless, they were always told how wonderful they were. Everybody gets a gold star. We can't exclude anybody. So regardless of your performance, you're all going to get praise will be heaped upon you. And when parents stopped having lots of kids and they only had one or two, then little Johnny or little Mary got heaps of praise because that's all they had. Right? You have one dog. That dog is almost worn out. That dog has worn spots like an old sofa from being petted so much. But when you got four dogs, you know what I mean? That dog's begging for attention. So they were given too much attention, too much praise. They were never stressed or strained, and I'm including high school sports. So what? All right, so they played some sports. That's nice. That's not exactly the same as having to hunt for the tribe and go out and find food, okay? That's a little bit different, a little controlled circumstance. It happens a couple hours here or there, and then you take a shower. That's a completely different thing. Let's contrast that throughout history, what it took, what the challenges were compared to a football team for a couple hours here or there. So most people are ill-prepared for this. And so then I get them, or anybody else who offers them a challenge. The Army gets them. And here, this is difficult because this is a big money opportunity, highly challenging work. And the only way you're going to make it is like if you want to go to night school for 5 or 6 years, or you want to, you know, go on a major expedition and climb, you know, Mount Everest or whatever. It takes commitment. Because when the going gets tough, I hate that trite slogan, but when it gets really, really difficult, the thin veneer of the false commitment you had is worn right through. And you're seen for what you are, which is someone who just doesn't care. Someone who just doesn't care enough to do it, just does not mean enough to you. I mean, you'd want it to be true. Like, you'd want the money, but I'll just take the lottery ticket. Just give me the money. I don't want to work for you. And And yet, at that level of 100% commitment, magic happens. It's unbelievable what happens. If you've never experienced this, it's almost like an epiphany. If you've ever committed 100% to something, 100%, you just stay with it long enough, you almost invariably will win, as long as it's a goal that's, you know, some realistic goal for your ability. I mean, you can go out stepping stone goals throughout your life. You can't sit there and have 100% commitment. You're failing algebra, but you want to do, you know, Einsteinian equations or whatnot, you know, next week. You know, it's not going to happen. But if you say, I want to get a physics degree in 4 years, you could do it. So how do you know if you have commitment? Well, just look back on your life and get a piece of paper, start listing the things, the challenges you've taken on. And then on one side, put, you know, have the challenge and then say, okay, here's the ones I succeeded on. And then the other ones, here's the one, and then list all the excuses you gave why you left. Well, job wasn't really like it was supposed to be, or nobody would, the customers were too stupid and they wouldn't buy the product. Price was too high. You know, my boss was really an asshole. You know, they lied about this or that. There's countless excuses to try to bolster up their ego of the fact that they quit, so they're not going to admit it. And it can't be their failure. It has to be someone else's failure. Now, if you've never taken on any real significant challenges, then you're even worse off because you're nowhere even near knowing how to do it. If all you've done is, you know, take the easy path through life, you're clueless. You ever watch the show where the guys are climbing Mount Everest on a TV and they took the cameras up with them? It was like a reality show, and all these guys were going up Everest. And you see the ones that were going, even them, and their toes are falling off, they're getting frostbite. They're almost dead. They get to the death zone up there. You're going up there 29,028 feet, I think it is. And when they get up there past 26,000, they're basically in the death zone. They're basically to the point where they can't carry you. They would die themselves. Everybody's basically dead. They're dying. They're literally dying. They try to get to the top and come back before they actually die. But they're actually slowly dying. They don't, even with oxygen tanks, it's freezing. They don't have, you know, they're using oxygen. If they didn't have oxygen, they'd die a lot quicker. They said if you go up there, they basically can't rescue you because they would lose two or three other people trying to carry your sorry ass out. And the one guy died, and they tried to carry him out anyway. And I don't know. That's when it gets interesting. But the ones who had, obviously, that extreme example, you have to really want to do that bad to put up with that much effort. Let's take the average sales position in light of that. Is it as hard as climbing Mount Everest? I don't think so. So anyway, here's a test for commitment. Here's a little game you can play. You can say, look, I'm going to close 4 deals, a deal a week, do or die, absolutely. I'm going to do whatever it takes, which means I'm going to make X amount of calls. I'm just going to, basically, if you insist that people buy, they'll start buying. If you ask them, do you want to buy? I don't know. And you say, oh, okay, well, I'll call you back next week. A lot of sales jobs basically work this way. You find a good prospect, you get a little interested in the idea, and then they try to stall you and put it off, and you just absolutely refuse. And you just basically force the deal to happen through sheer power of will. You will not be put off. You will not take a maybe. You will walk from the deal. You're demanding a yes or a no. At that point, you're just really just like, that's it. I'm going to sell or not. You got to buy. This is, you know, if this is in your best interest, then do it. What are you waiting for? You'll overcome all the objections, and you'll actually force your will onto the situation. You will actually make the sale happen. That's why the definition of a closer is someone who makes sales happen. They don't wait for sales to become easy, because sales are rarely easy, unless you work at a retail store and you're ringing people up. Otherwise, they're all hard. And since they're all hard, you might as well take the ones that pay a lot. So if you make just one or two, you're making a lot of money. That's the ideal position. But making sales happens is always difficult. And if you have anything less than 100% commitment to that process, they will have the wiggle room they need to get away like a fish. Just when you're going to pull them into the net, the fish wiggles away and it's in the water laughing, ha, I'm gone. They jump right out of your hands. You were this close. So here's an artificial construct. It's a learning aid on how you can set this up. I want you to take a piece of wood about 1 foot long and about half a foot wide. I want you to take off your shoe and sock on one of your feet, whatever foot you want. I want you to take a pencil and do an outline of your foot, just like you used to do with your hand when you were in grade school. Then I want you to take a red marking pen and decide which toe you're going to chop off if you don't get the deal next week. And I want you to take an axe, and I want you to whack the axe, right, into that red toe and leave it there. And that's the toe that's going. And then I want you to say to yourself that I'm going to chop off my toe or I'm going to get a deal next week. And I want you to commit to doing that. Now you have 10 toes. You could be in a village back when, and you're going to need to get some food, right? Your wife maybe have 3 young children or whatever, and they're starving. You need to get a deer, and she tells you, don't come back. I don't care what you do. Find me a deer. We're all hungry here. You're supposed to be the hunter. Go hunt. So they've lost legs. They've lost legs. You know what I mean? They got attacked by their animals, fall down, break their arm. They could easily lose a totus, frostbite or whatever, just trying to get a deer to feed their family. I mean, they would have that commitment. They will, in effect, put themselves in harm's way. You can get hurt hunting, especially with primitive weapons. It was not that, you know, unusual to get wrecked. There's a lot of people that put themselves at risk on their job. But you're not, because all you have to do is pick up phones. Well, here you go. I'm going to even things out for you. Now, what would happen, do you think, if at the end of Friday, how many calls are you going to make on Friday if you don't have your sale yet? And what are you going to sound like on the phone if you know that you got till 6 o'clock and then the axe falls exactly at 6, the toe comes off? Now, I'm going to make this easy for you first-timers. I'll allow you to go to the hospital and get the son of a bitch sewed back on again. But the hardcore guys will have it bronzed and then put it on their desk. You guys like that one? Actually, that's a hedge if you have it sewn back on. I'll compare this. I Saudi Arabia, if they catch you stealing, and I was there for 2 years, on Friday, which is the holy day, at noon, if they have someone like that, they take them out to the center square of town. And since I was working at the hospital, I know how this one works. What they do is they take them in. They have a big, like, stump. They take them in there, and they have the guy with the sword, or the axe, right? They give a big shot in the right shoulder blade. They're a little humane now. They stick his arm on the stump, and they chop off his hand. Then they dip it in tar. Then they put him in the ambulance, and they take him to the hospital. And that's what they do for people who steal. Do you know what the crime rate is in Saudi Arabia? It's about 1/20th of what it is here. They have virtually no crime like that. That takes care of that. Do you know why it's the right hand that they chop off?
Yes.
Well, I'll explain it to the people who don't know. You wipe your ass with your left hand and you eat with your right. You never, ever eat with your left. So they chop off your right hand. What does that mean then for the rest of your life? Not only are you marked as a thief, but you can't eat with other people then for the rest of your life. You've basically been totally ostracized. It's a lot more cruel than just losing the hand. Hey, I don't know why I thought of that, but it's a good story. Oh, yeah, the toe. Oh, yeah. A lot of people lose toes. You know, lumberjacks, all kinds of people work with power tools and axes and stuff. Toe's not that big of a deal. If it's a big deal for you, then, you know, there you go. Anyway, so what would happen, do you think, on the phone on Friday? How many phone calls are you going to make now? How many people are going to be able to interrupt you? You know, hey, you want to go out for lunch? Yeah, okay, I'll go with you. Where are we going? Sushi. Okay, cool. You know, have a couple glasses of sake, waste about 3 hours. Well, you want to do some research on this call, you know? Spend about an hour and a half on the internet to make one phone call. You know, start at 10, quit at 3, hour and a half for lunch. Take Friday off and then work, you know, don't start Monday until like 3 or 2 o'clock on Monday. You know, blow off most of Monday, most of Friday, take long lunches, start late and quit early. And then dawdle the whole time you're at work. There you go. A lot of people are treating this job like they're getting paid by the hour. They're just totally unproductive. They're so used to being paid for not doing anything that they really don't know how to be productive. I didn't see all you guys. I said some of you. I don't know which ones. Probably the ones that don't turn any deals. Find a mirror and look into it. Tell me who you see. Anyway. What do you think is going to happen if you're going to lose your toe at 6 o'clock on Friday? Hey, Vermont, what do you think is going to happen?
You'll be motivated.
What kind of motivation? Internal or external?
Internal.
Why?
Actually, you know, it's the external motivation that makes you be motivated internally, because if you know it's coming off, you are motivated.
I think it's
going to happen.
That one could be described as an external motivator in that even though you're doing it yourself. But then if you're doing it yourself, I guess it has to be internal. It's a really kind of a fuzzy thing, the internal, external, right? It's kind of fuzzy. Well, I guess it all depends on the perspective you're looking at it. Let's say that you didn't sell one at 6 o'clock on a Friday. Who's going to chop off the toe?
Your wife.
No. Which one of you guys is going to chop off your toe if you commit to doing this? Who would do it? Who would chop off your toe? I get a lot of silence. That's interesting. Let me run it by this way, okay? Let me reposition this for you. What if I told you that if you did this, you would absolutely know internally, you would have a totally internalized what a commitment really is, and then you'd own it for the rest of your life. You'd own that commitment. You may be short a toe or two. Or 3. It depends how fast you learn. Now, I'm talking about something you know you should be able to do, that there's a deal out there you can get if you really wanted to. I'm not talking about some long shot. I could say by the end of the month, are you going to get a sale all the way through? I'm talking about a challenge that you know you should be able to do, not one you're hedging whether or not you even think it's possible to do. You know it's possible to do. It's just a matter of whether you want, you'll actually do it. For that toe, which I like the idea of putting a bronze and putting on. For that toe, you will now be 10 times more successful at sales for the rest of your life, and in general, your whole life, you'll be way more successful in life than you ever thought possible in exchange for that toe. Guaranteed. Let's say I guarantee you that was going to happen. Would you chop off the toe now if you had to? You might not even have to. Just the idea that you will is good enough.
With or without anesthesia.